Welcome, everyone. Episode 456 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek. It is almost the end of August, and we somehow have NBA news. Lauri Markkanen has finally found a home. So we will talk about the three-team sign-and-trade that Woj broke on Friday, and then we will get into the best remaining free agents now that Markkanen is off the market. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is someone who I know is lamenting the loss of Lauri Markkanen. Mort, how are you?
I mean, I'm doing well, and I'm doing especially well if I'm the Portland Trailblazers, because I think that they ended up, like, they could wind up the big winners of this trade that we'll get into.
Interesting. Okay. I have a slightly different take on that, but let's go through the terms first. Yes. So Lauri Markkanen is going to the Cleveland Cavaliers on a 4-year, $67 million contract. The fourth year is only partially guaranteed. I think it's about $6 million guaranteed. Mm-hmm. The Cavs are sending Larry Nance Jr. to the Portland Trail Blazers, and they are sending a 2023 second-round pick via the Denver Nuggets to Chicago. That pick is protected 31 through 46, so it will only convey if it's between 47 and 60. Portland is sending Derek Jones Jr. and a lottery protected 2022 first round pick to Chicago. That pick is protected through 2028, lottery protected every year. God forbid if they miss the playoffs for seven straight years, it will become a second round pick. So let's start with the Cavs, since they're the ones who Markkanen. And I feel like,
I thought we should start with a team that got the best player.
The reaction on NBA Twitter when this news broke, Woj, you know, as he want to do, tweets out the salary structure first. And even then, when I just saw 4 years, $67 million, Lauri Markkanen to the Cavs, I was already like, what the hell? And then seeing that they gave up Larry Nance and a second round pick to sign Markkanen to this deal, that only strengthened my conviction of questioning everything they're doing, as did, that was the larger reaction from the NBA community, it seems. So what do you think? You've seen Markkanen up close for the last couple of years. What do you think of the Cavs acquiring him in general, and then the price they paid to get him?
So before I go into like the analysis of it, I do want to say something in just in regards to that, because you know how Chicago more or less did the same thing with DeMar DeRozan, that they overpaid in trade and then they also handed him a contract that was probably above market value. The justification of doing that was now they get in a big name player that kind of like lays the foundation moving forward. It's a message to the rest of the league that we can get big name players if we're the Bulls. For the Cavs, they're trying to say, well, we can get big players too, but I just wonder if Markkanen falls into that category. So if that's the mindset that the Cavaliers have gone into, basically saying, okay, we need to send a signal. We need to send a signal that we have this guy who was very hyped up for a couple of years and we can get him. Like, okay, I can actually see on some crazy level the justification of it. I just think there is a pretty big, substantial difference in Lauri Markkanen and DeMar DeRozan, just in terms of quality. But I will give them that benefit of the doubt, simply because I think logically it does make some sort of sense. That said, hopefully.
I was waiting for this.
Yes. But here's the thing. Everything I've heard about Lauri Markkanen from a personality perspective is good. Like, I have not heard a bad word about Lauri Markkanen the person ever. Quite the contrary. So you're getting a high locker room guy, a high character locker room guy. That's for sure. You're getting a guy who is committed, who is a strong worker, even though he hasn't really developed. It hasn't been because he doesn't have a high work ethic. So in that sense, it's great. It's just the on-court issues. He is so inconsistent. And it comes down to the fact that he provides you with no other positive alternatives if he's not shooting the ball well. If he comes into the game and he'll probably start, I'm assuming, because when you sign a 4-year, $67 million contract, I have to assume that you'll be starting. You can more or less tell what kind of game he's going to have after 5 minutes of him being on the court. If he's not aggressive right off the bat, you are getting one of those 3-for-9 shooting games where he's just kind of running around a little bit, trying to find open shots. And sometimes he'll can a couple threes, and that will be all she wrote. And then you have the flip side of the coin, which the Cavaliers are obviously hoping for, where he puts it all together. Like where he's starting to hit from the outside, he puts the ball on the floor, he gets to the basket, he'll get a couple lobs as well, maybe even occasionally, and this does happen, but definitely not with high regularity whatsoever, he'll have a mismatch in the post, and he'll actually take advantage of it because he's 7 feet tall. This is something he routinely forgets. So I hope for the Cavs, and I hope for Markkanen that they're getting the aggressive version, you know, a guy who does this more often than not, because in Chicago, he just stopped being that. He just started, you know, hanging around the three-point line, started to wait for anyone else to create for him because he's not a self-creator. And when I say put ball on the floor, as I did a moment ago, I don't mean him breaking down defenses off the dribble, creating his own shot. Like this is a situation where he's on the 3-point line, he gets a kick out, and then he puts the ball on the floor. He takes 2 or 3 strong dribbles and goes to the hole. So like, it's not because he can take the ball up the court, like do a double crossover and like get his guy off rhythm and then go to the basket. He's not that kind of dude. And for the shooting part, I think friend of the podcast, Mark Karantzoulis, did something. He broke something down on Twitter, which I really like. There are a lot of people who are kind of comparing Markkanen to a Davis Bertans. And it's not a, like, if you do that, it means you haven't watched those two play. It means you're just looking at the stats, like the 3-point stats. Because what Bertans does is he kind of moves like a guard. You and I have seen Bertans a lot. The way that he catches the ball when shooting threes, that is very guard-like. Like he bends and twists his body, and like he's coming off these deep screens, and like he's basically a 6'10 version of JJ Redick, the way that his body moves and positions himself. Markkanen is not that. He is not a guy who will run through 17 back screens, come up on the other side of the floor, and fling his body into a jump shot. No, he is a standstill spot-up shooter, which means that he doesn't bend the defense all that much. So I just kind of worry a little bit with how he can affect this team, because what you need alongside Darius Garland and Colin Sexton is spacing. Also because Isaac Okoro is not yet at least a floor spacing wing. So I wonder, what can you do with Markkanen, who is a standstill shooter primarily, given that he's not one of those guys who can really bend defenses? Does that give them this advantage that they're looking for? Or are they basically just getting and follow me on this one, a 24-year-old, 32-year-old Kevin Love? If you catch for drift, like they're not getting a Kevin Love for age 24, 26. Like they're getting somewhat current Kevin Love, maybe slightly better. Is that really going to affect anything? I have my doubts, but I would love to be proven wrong.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think the problem with this beyond just, as you said, they like overpaid to overpay him. They overpaid in trade to overpay him contractually. You also have to take it in the perspective of what they did this entire offseason. Spending the number 3 pick on Evan Mobley.
Correct.
Giving Jared Allen a 5-year, $100 million contract that already raised questions about how those two guys are going to fit together.
Yes.
Then you give Markkanen this contract, and it's like, okay, you've devoted so much money and resources to your front court. We're not really sure how these guys are going to fit together or who fits best with one another. You know, maybe they see it as Mobley and Markkanen are our long-term front court, and we signed Allen as a stopgap while Mobley gets up to speed, and then we'll try to trade Allen later. But as we discussed when they gave Allen that contract, we don't know how much value that is going to have on the trade market, if much at all. So that is one of my concerns with this trade, or just overall offseason vision. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, this is something they can rectify in the future, but right now their forward depth, their like 3-4 depth is more small forward depth, I guess, is really questionable. It's basically Isaac Okoro and Chetty Osman, and that's it. I mean, you can feel pretty good about, you've got, Colin Sexton, Darius Garland in the backcourt. You have Ricky Rubio at least for this season backing them up. Maybe they're high on Dylan Windler taking a step forward, but I just don't see this move helping them, get much better in terms of their playoff positioning. Like, I don't think this puts them not even in the tier of the Bulls or the Celtics or the Hawks or anything like that. I'm still taking the Pacers over them. I'm still taking the Wizards over them. I'm still taking Toronto over them. Like, they still feel like they're going to be the 12 or the 13 seed in the East.
Right.
So I just don't really see the vision, the overall vision here. And, we don't know what's going to happen.
Is there one? Is there a vision?
I don't know. I mean, that's part of the thing too, is like, who are they competing against to sign Lauri Markkanen? If it's the end of August and this guy's still unsigned, maybe they saw the writing on the wall and said, this guy could just take his qualifying offer and become an unrestricted free agent next year. In which case, couldn't you have probably just had the same deal on the table? Like, are they really that desperate to get Lauri Markkanen in now that they weren't willing to just wait a year and see who else might be on the market and see if they could find a better fit than this guy?
It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, it could be that the Cavaliers just like him and think that there's something there, something untapped, because that is really the only explanation that I have that would make any sense for it. What I really don't get, though, is the sacrifice of Nance.
Yeah.
Because it's not like he was a free agent. Like, he had another year left on his deal after this season. Like, he effectively has 2 years left. The season that we're going to go into right now or in a couple months, and then the year after, for a total of $20.3 million. Markkanen this year, and these aren't official salary commitments yet, but I'm looking at Spotrac, which has him at roughly $15.58 million as a starting salary. Why would you not rather just spend less than $5 million more total over 2 years for Nance, who can play the four, can play the five, gives you more defense, gives you playmaking, gives you some interior presence that Markin doesn't give you? I mean, that's what I don't get. He can play two positions. Markkanen is a through and through four. So if you want to say, okay, the future is Evan Mobley and Lauri Markkanen, you're once again going out with that, old school, let's have two bigs in the front court, which is just, it's so 5 years ago at this point. I don't understand why you would go that route. Now, if Markkanen could play center, it would be a completely different mentality. Then I would be behind it because I think, oh, okay, then you can kind of make them interchangeable. But the Bulls try playing him at center extensively. It does not work. He cannot hold that position at all. There is just nothing there to suggest that he can be a rim protected. There's nothing there to indicate that he'll be, an impactful center in that sense, like the last line of defense, someone who can play the dunker spot. Like, no. He is a guy who hangs around the perimeter. I don't remember who said this. I think it was in the Chicago Bulls group that I'm in, basically saying Markkanen would be better if he was 6'7" than 7 feet. That's what he is. He's basically Chetty Osman, but 7 feet tall.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a fair question. I guess he's more age aligned with Sexton, Garland, and Mobley than Larry Nance, who is 28 and turning 29 in January. So that could be the one argument that favoring Lauri over Nance. But as you said at the top of the episode, Larry Nance is a better player right now than Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah.
So they gave up the better player on a cheaper contract and gave up a very heavily protected second round pick. That's who really cares about that. But even if it's just Laurie on 4 years, $67 million versus Nance on 2 years, whatever, 20-some million.
20.3.
Like, I prefer Larry Nance.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I realize that I'm being harsh on marketing, but again, I think these fours, I think it's a problem that they're, again, we go back to John Collins as well, right? Mm-hmm. A guy who really can't play a whole lot of center, who just got $125 million, and he was significantly less prioritized in the playoffs offensively, which is where his primary strength is. Like, so if you lean into it, it might work. Like, maybe Colby Altman and JB Bickerstaff goes, like, has a meeting and just say, okay, look, we just invested $67 million in Lauri Markkanen. Let's empower him. Let's go out there and make sure that he gets at the very least 14, 15 shots per game. Because mm-hmm. that's the mentality I want the Hawks to have with Collins. They just paid him $125 million over 5 years. You better make damn sure that, unlike in the playoffs when he took 10 shots per game over 32 minutes, that he takes a lot more. You want to lean into his strengths. Otherwise, what the hell are you paying him for? Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to see from Markkanen in Cleveland. Like, yeah, he is an offensive talent. I'm not going to sit here and say he's useless. He's not. I mean, offensively, he is good. You just need to make sure that the situation is right for him. You need to make sure that the circumstances are right for him. And then you need to make sure that he is on the same page. Like, not just standing around. Stay aggressive all the time. If you do that, okay, fine, I'll buy it. The thing is, and you kind of alluded to it as well, we haven't seen it yet. So right now, they're banking on the upside. They're banking on everything working out. They're investing $67 million. The Hawks are investing $125 million in this old-school mentality player, kind of flipping that switch and going, yeah, we can do all these things that we get paid to. We can certainly live up to our contracts. I'm not as sure. And if Hawks fans love the Collins contract, more power to you. And if Cavaliers fans love the marketing contract, again, more power to you. But I am definitely skeptical of that type of archetype of player working in the NBA in 2021.
Yeah, the Cavs fans that I follow on Twitter, at least, all seem very underwhelmed by this move. Yes. So I don't think we have to worry about infuriating Cavs fans. I think they are mad enough on their own right now.
Right.
So let's go to Portland now, since we've been talking about Larry Nance.
Yes.
You named them as the possible winner of this trade.
Yes.
So why do you feel that way?
Because they finally have a big who isn't robotic. And I'm not saying that Yusuf Nurkic isn't good, but Nurkic is very robotic. He's not a fluent shooter. Like, he does need to play under a certain set of rules before he's really effective. Nance comes in and is just like this all-around big. He gives them something that they haven't had for at least 5 years. I don't think Dame has ever had this versatile a big to ever play with. And I realize the name, Larry Nance Jr., isn't sexy. I realize that he's not an all-star. I realize he's not an all-NBA guy, all of that. But this is a guy who comes in. He can shoot the ball. He can get to the basket because he's also athletic as hell. He can rebound and he can pass, Brian. He can really pass. You can put him in pick and roll situations from outside the three-point line. You can pick him in pick and pop situations. You can play him in short rolls. You can play him in the dunker spot. He is just so damn versatile that Dame and CJ finally have this very flexible four/five guy who can come in and do all sorts of weird things. Like, no longer will the ball necessarily have to stick in Damon or CJ's hands. Like, you can pass the ball to Nance and tell him, go get us a shot. Go create for someone else. Do weird stuff because it works. He is good. And this just, to me, is such a wonderful and tremendous upgrade for them that they've needed for so long. And also, and I should have written about it. I wrote about the trade for Forbes, and I didn't bring this up because I was going a little bit long. I think the acquisition of Nance Jr. to Portland is going to unlock Robert Covington. I think that might fix Robert Covington because there's going to be so much gravity around the pick and roll of Damon Nance or CJ and Nance and all of that. Rob is going to be able to just run around. he's able to fly under the radar in that segment, and he can just spot up all he wants. I think ultimately Nance could be a guy that unlocks the entire offensive system in Portland and takes them up a tier, which is what they've been looking for. Now, does that mean that the Blazers are championship contenders? No, I'm not saying that. But I think they got better. I think they got drastically better, and it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever if they're a full-on, locked-in playoff team that actually avoids the play-in tournament altogether, because this is a good upgrade, a good, solid upgrade. They got the best player in the entire trade.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I agree that short-term, this is they are the big winners of this trade. Like, for if we are looking at it just this year alone, this I totally agree this makes them better. And you know, I think Larry Nance Jr. flies it under the radar because he's been playing for a bad Cavaliers team that most people haven't been watching for the last couple of years. But Larry Nance Jr. is genuinely good. And, you know, he is the exact type of role player that all good teams need. He's going to look better in Portland than he did even in Cleveland, I think, because he's going to be surrounded by better talent and he can, you know, fill in those gaps wherever needed. You talked about the versatility and flexibility of him. That also unlocks some versatility and flexibility for the whole team. Now, you know, last year, their starting five, especially after the Norman Powell trade, you know, they have been running this back all offseason about how they had one of the best net ratings with Dame, CJ, Powell, Covington, and Nurkic. And that's great. But as soon as those guys stepped off the floor and it was Carmelo and Enes Kanter as their backup front court, they just started bleeding points, just absolutely hemorrhaging points. So now you replace that with Larry Nance Jr. and Cody Zeller, and I feel better about them being able to break even. You know, you now have a backup unit with Anthony Simons. We have Nasir Little still there. We have Ben McLemore, Tony Snell, Derek Jones Jr., Cody Zeller. Like, they go a legit 10, 11 deep now, even if Simons and Little are still a little rough around the edges and still need to grow into their games a little bit. You can hope for some internal improvement there just because those two guys are young, and really that's your only hope for internal improvement at this point.
I think that is fair.
But you know, now you can run out lineups with, you know, a Jones Covington front court. Like, they were just so traditional. If you had either Nurkic or Kanter, like, you had to play just a traditional five, and you know, Kanter is great offensively, great on the glass, just a god-awful defender, especially in pick and rolls. If you have Nance and Covington, that, you know, that's a really intriguing small ball five unit.
Yeah.
So that's something that they just did not have the ability to do last year. And then we can, you know, get crazy, put Nance with Nurkic or put Nance and Zeller together. Like, there are so many different combinations of players they can try out now that they just did not have the luck. They were just so top heavy and thin last year. You know, now I feel better about their overall team construct. That the only thing that gives me pause here is still just the Dame situation. Like, we don't know, you know, all of the jokes up until this trade, and Dan Devine of The Ringer wrote about it earlier this week, was like, okay, Dame said, we got to put pressure on the front office. We need to show that we are committed to winning now. And they went out and signed Tony Snell and Ben McLemore and Cody Zeller, who are fine depth players, but they didn't change Portland's overall standing in the West.
Right.
And I don't think that Nance does either. I agree with you that this hopefully cements them as a top six team in the West and that they can avoid the play-in, but I still don't think they're a legit threat to win the West, or even if they do, even if, you know, we have the same cascade of injuries that happened this past year and they're the last team standing, I don't see any way they're beating Brooklyn or Milwaukee in the NBA finals if it comes to that point. So that, you know, with Dame still, did this appease him enough to say, okay, I'm, you know, forget everything I said this off season where I'm hinting I'm disgruntled, like, I'm committed here long term.
Right.
If that's the case, that's fine. But I just hesitate giving up any draft picks right now if I'm Portland, not knowing exactly what's going to happen with Dame. Because God forbid you miss the playoffs this year, and then he requests out. And now you've got this draft pick that you owe dangling over your heads. And maybe you don't have to give it up for a couple of years, because without Dame, maybe you decide to trade him for a picks and prospect package instead of, you know, Ben Simmons plus stuff that keeps us competitive. Right. But either way, you know, that's one fewer thing that you're going to have to rebuild around. And as I just mentioned, you know, the cupboard is already pretty barren in terms of young players who you hope can be, you know, if you're looking ahead post Dame, regardless of, you know, when that happens, just isn't much there. And now you've taken away one potential future asset as well. So I like the trade for them. I really do. And I do think this makes them better, but I still worry about the long-term vision, right? Like I know they are committed to building around Dame and keeping them there, but it isn't totally their say. And I worry that they are focusing so much on appeasing him now that they're just going to make their long-term future even worse, which we've discussed earlier this offseason with all of these guys heading into contract years as well. Like I still just can't help but feel this offseason was the natural pivot point and that they will grow to regret not doing it a couple years down the road.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see. I know I'm going to piss off all of Portland fans again because I keep working on it. But
I think it's a fair analysis. What I'm sitting here with the feeling left here is you're right that the cupboard is bare. And when I look at the roster, I'm just wondering, where did it all go? Like, Dame wasn't a guy who cost you assets to get in the first place. Neither was CJ. Those guys were drafted. So if you're spending picks and if you're spending money, where the hell did it all go to for the external upgrades? What do you have to show for it?
Covington cost two firsts.
Two picks, right? Exactly, yeah.
And then... So, did Nurkic cost? No, they got a pick with Nurkic, I think, right?
I actually don't remember, but that only makes the situation worse then, because then they would have had more assets to get better. My point is merely, when you look at the Blazers right now, clearly they didn't make the right moves, because you wouldn't be in the situation with a bare cupboard if you built the right team around Dame and CJ, who were original draft picks. So, like, this is just a tough situation all around. I mean, if they hit on the Larry Nance thing, if he comes in and unlocks some things, great. If Greg Brown or Anthony Simons or Nasir Little hits, great. But as it stands right now, they just don't have a whole lot to show for anything that they've done over the past, half decade?
Yeah, I can tell you, I just looked at their draft page on Basketball Reference, and I can tell you where they did not have picks in 2014 and 2016, and I don't remember who they traded for 6 years ago. So 2017, they traded 15 and 20 to move up to 10 to take Zach Collins.
Yeah. That'll do it. That'll be one of the things.
Yeah. So they had Simons and Little. They didn't have second round picks in 2018 or 2019. 2020 got sent. It was number 16. That was one of the picks that went for Covington. And that was Isaiah Stewart.
So, yeah, that's not great. Yep.
No. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, again, I am very bullish on this move for what it means for them next year. I don't want that to be misconstrued. I think they got the best player in the trade. I think this makes them better. It's really just a short-term versus long-term thing for me. But that leads us into Chicago, who I actually think might be the biggest long-term winners of this deal, Mort, because they turned Lauri Markkanen, who they did not have any interest in retaining, whether this offseason as a restricted free agent or if he took the qualifying offer. Next offseason, he was going to be an unrestricted free agent. He was almost certainly going to leave. They turn him into a lottery-protected first-round pick.
Yes.
They turn him into a second-round pick from Denver that, you know, heavily protected but could end up conveying in the 47 to 60 range. And, yeah, okay, it's not going to have much value, but – you know, teams do find value. I mean, Sharif Cooper was just the 48th pick in this year's draft and looks like a draft day steal. So, you know, you can occasionally find some diamonds in the rough down there.
And then you get a chance with that, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hell, most every other team aside from Atlanta should be upset about that one. And then you get a flyer on Derek Jones Jr., who's only 24 years old. He fell out of the rotation in Portland last year, but he's now playing with great passers in Lonzo and Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan and Nikola Vucevic. Yes. I'm not going to write this guy off as being a contributor, and the Bulls aren't going to ask him to start like Blazers did. You know, he's going to come off the bench, play 15 minutes a game, and he should be fine in that role.
Yeah. So this is where you're asking me about my opinion on the matter, because you more or less just said it right there.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, I think I would hope that it at least causes some reflection on the DeMar DeRozan sign and trade, because I know there is a lot of backlash about how much the Bulls paid to get him, not just the contract itself, but giving up Vad, giving up the first round pick. Now knowing that they turned Markkanen into Derek Jones Jr. in a lottery protected first round pick, they effectively broke even on that specific segment of the DeMar DeRozan trade. So it's like you basically traded Lauri Markkanen for the right to overpay DeMar DeRozan, which is a lot better than
to be fair.
Right, but you're getting Derek. I'm saying like Derek Jones Jr. in the first round pick for Thad in the first round pick almost breaks even. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Like I know Thad's better at the moment, but it's a close enough that you recouped a lot of the value you lost in the trade aspect of the sign and trade for DeMar DeRozan.
Correct. I think the issue is like if you put everything Chicago did over the course of the summer up in one big ass move, they come out as clear winners of that one trade. But it's just like the individual DeMar DeRozan trade that is really being dramatized over a lot. I think the Bulls came into this with a clear mission of wanting to recoup one of those first round picks. They got it. I think there's a good chance that it will convey, because what are the odds that the Blazers are going to miss the playoffs from next year and on to and including 2028? It seems unlikely. I like it. And the thing with Derek Jones Jr. is, I'll be honest and say that I was significantly higher on him, 12 months ago than I am now, in part because he never really broke through in Portland. Like I had him as one of the guys on my shortlist for MIP last year, for example. I think there's a lot there, but he just kind of stagnated. He wasn't really evolving offensively, defensively. He's unfortunately a little bit overrated, I think, but hell, look, circumstances, they matter. Maybe he comes into a Chicago team where he like you said, where he isn't planned on, playing 25 minutes per game, where he's like playing 12, 15 minutes a game, and he's getting, he's getting told over the course of these next 15 minutes, or whatever kind of minutes you get, we are only going to give you like three job descriptions, and that's that. Maybe that's what actually propels him forward. Maybe he can be a quote unquote star in that kind of role. We'll see. And if not, Brian, that's an expiring contract of $9.7 million that you can package with. Well, let's workshop it. You can package it with Coby White and an additional first round draft pick. Maybe the one that the Bulls just got, the 2022 draft pick from Portland. Then you can go out and say, well, we're looking for an upgrade. Maybe you find some sort of big, like 4-5 combo man who can come in and actually play a substantial minutes at that position, who can make you a strong candidate to advance in the playoffs. Like, I don't know. We'll see. But it's just the fact that they have options now. Like, we were talking about the Portland Trailblazers not having a whole lot left in the cupboard. That we said the same thing about the Bulls, and now they just kind of restocked it a little bit. Not to the point where, they're the process Sixers or anything, of course.
Right.
But they have something to work with now, and they still maintain their own draft picks in the year that they aren't sending to Orlando and to San Antonio, for example. So they can still make those draft picks, and then you can trade them afterwards. Like, I don't think Chicago is as acid barren as a lot of people are making them out to be.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that at all. I mean, because it's not like Zach LaVine is super old here. I mean, he's
26.
26, yeah. And Caruso is 27. Kobe, is 21. right? Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Let me look it up.
I'm pretty sure
he is.
He turns 2000. 22 in February, and then Patrick Williams just turned 20. Like
he just turned 20 the other day.
2 days ago. Yeah. So it's not. And hell, Troy Brown Jr. as well is only 22.
21. 22. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. So right. So I mean Simonovic, who I know you've been talking up this offseason as well.
Yeah, he had a rough time in summer league. I have to be fair.
Okay. So maybe. All right. But and Tony Bradley as well. I mean, like, this is not a Portland situation where it's like we have Anthony Simons and we have Nasir Little and we are out after that. Like, there is a lot of talent here in the early to mid 20s that, you know, a Portland in particular doesn't have. Hell, even Io, the second round pick this year as well. So, So, no, I think I would not call the Bulls. I mean, in terms of draft picks, yes. But, you know, the Bulls, what they did this offseason, bringing in Lonzo, Caruso, DeRozan, and now Derek Jones Jr., they're not in asset acquisition mode. Like, they made their moves. They might have to reshuffle some pieces around. But, like, this was their summer of big splashes. This was their summer that Atlanta had last year, where they added Gallinari and Capella at the trade deadline, Bogdanovich. So, this is the summer that's supposed to propel them into at least where Atlanta was, you know, the number five seed last year. And I think it could and probably will, because you tweeted out after the trade became, I don't know if it's even official yet, even when it broke yesterday, you tweeted out their potential depth chart now.
Yeah.
And when you look at it, it is Lonzo, LaVine, DeRozan, Patrick Williams, Vucevic starting five, which is pretty damn strong on paper. You go to the bench and it's Caruso, Kobe White, Troy Brown Jr., Derek Jones Jr., and Tony Bradley.
Yes. I don't know why people are saying that's a bad lineup. I had a troll that I ended up blocking basically saying, that's trash. Like, how is that trash? I mean, I understand it's not like the 2018, 2017 Raptors when they could just go like 12 deep. I get that. But like Tony Bradley, from a statistical perspective, is extremely productive. I mean, in limited minutes. Then you have Derek Jones Jr. Yeah, okay, fair. Like he is a question mark, but he is athletic. He can run. He's an improving shooter, although he will never be a good shooter in my opinion. There's some defensive upside. Then you go to Troy Brown Jr., who can handle the ball, who can pass, who's a strong rebounder, who can really set the table. You have Kobe, who's just a straight bucket getter. I mean, he could come in that second unit and just absolutely get the green light to shoot. And then you have Alex Caruso, one of the best point of attack defenders in the entire NBA. I don't think that's a bad second unit. I honestly think, Brian, that second unit is better than some of the starting lineups that the Bulls threw out before Zach LaVine, like when they were piecing together like some sort of weird rotation with Denzel Valentine and like Ryan Arcidiacono.
Yeah. Like,
we have to look at what the Bulls had and what they have now. No longer will the Bulls have to rely on Ryan Arcidiacono and Denzel Valentine. That's a win in and of itself.
right. I was about to say, when you mentioned Kobe, the first thing that came to mind is this guy's going to be in the 6 minute of the year conversation. And I immediately went to FanDuel to check the odds. And lo and behold, he is tied with Derrick Rose for the third best odds for 6 minute of the year this year.
You know,
I know it's your favorite award.
points, man. Yay, points. Well, no, but here's the thing. Why not Alex Caruso, if you catch my drift?
If he's
one of the best point of attack defenders in the entire NBA, why not him? Why isn't he on there, right?
He is on there. He's a little lower. He's at plus 5,500, tied with just at Doug McDermott, Brandon Clark, Mitchell Robinson, Grayson Allen, Kelly Olynyk, which I don't – is he not going to start?
I think he's going to start. I also think McDermott is going to start, right?
Yeah. Luke Kennard, Rodney Hood, Lou Williams, all in that
regardless
range as well.
I appreciate that FanDuel actually has him there in that conversation, because I'm not gonna go down that road again.
Save ultimately, what you, You know we're going to do an awards pod before we start the season.
We're probably going to do a few if I know you're right. No, but I like it. I think it's a solid second unit. I mean, hell, look, if we even go a little bit further with the youth, right? You brought up Marko Simonovic and all these guys. Like, even if you go to the third unit where you have Marko, you have Devon Dotson. Granted, he's on a two-way, but we'll see. And you have Io. Like, there's some potential there. Like, are they good right now? No. Could they be good in the future? Absolutely. Could one of those guys turn into something down the line? Yes. And then they could supplant whoever was in the secondary rotation. I just like that there's some competitive field in Chicago now. Like, you have talent that goes deep, which means competition in training camp, which means competition over the course of the regular season. There's just a lot to like there. I mean, hell, look, Javonte Green, for example, who is going to be the third string small forward, insanely athletic, fights and scraps like hell, defensively is really solid. Like, nobody wants to go up against him in practice. Like, he is going to somehow, some way, squeeze out minutes for himself because he's just that type of guy. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I'm not saying that the Bulls have the greatest depth in the NBA or anything ridiculous like that, but I do think this ideology that the Bulls have no depth is just flat out wrong. And I'm seeing it all over. Oh, the Bulls have no depth. It's just completely, completely untrue.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think Derek Jones Jr. is only going to help in that regard. Again, you're not relying on him to play a major role, but given his athleticism alone, pairing him with that many guys who can create, like, just send him flying to the rim every time.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, you nailed it. When we talked about Derek Jones Jr., I think a couple of years ago, I think you and I floated the idea of what about turning him into a small ball center? Remember?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just set screens, or even just as a, like, not just setting screens, but like set screens, but also just run the perimeter and fill the lane. Just have him running all the time. Make sure he's in front of the pack. Just send him oops and make sure that he gets deep rim protection or rim position. Throw the ball. See what happens. Like, I just like the versatility. And also, Brian, what I'm really intrigued about when you look at that roster right now, outside of maybe Marko Simonovic, there isn't that traditional power forward. It's Patrick Williams in the starting unit and Derek Jones Jr. in the second. Guys who, at least 5 years ago, would have been completely pigeonholed into being full-time threes.
Yeah, or tweeners.
Or tweeners. Like, yes. I love this. This is the Bulls are finally a modern team. And we've been waiting on this. I remember a couple of years ago, we didn't even record. You and I were just, you know, shooting the shit, I think after an episode or something. And you were like, I don't understand what the Bulls always being this traditionalist. And this was under Garpax. Like, they always wanted the two bigs. They wanted one guard to, like, the thing. They wanted one guy to create everything, and it just never worked out. Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Eversley has, in a span of a little over a year, almost a year and a half, completely flipped everything over. I am just super impressed with how they did it, because guard packs didn't leave a lot of assets in the cupboard whatsoever. Uh-huh. Kevin Farragut on Twitter has been all over this. Like, guard packs left Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Eversley in a really crappy situation. And Bulls fans had more or less resigned themselves to, you know what, this is going to take a while because, like, you can't work without assets.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow they did. I think Arturis Karnišovas, depending on how this is going to work out with Lonzo and DeMar, I think he should be in conversation of like early conversations of executive of the year, just because he turned no assets whatsoever into this.
That's fair. I mean, I have a feeling Sean Marks is going to win it. Just as you know, typically, like, executive of the year gets awarded a year or two too late sometimes.
Right.
And you know, he'll get it for signing Kevin Durant to an extension, even though he, like, the big move was getting Kevin Durant. So, I don't know. We'll see. We'll save that
for James Harden. That kind of matters as well.
Maybe. Right. They got Patty Mills, I guess. But no. Well,
and look, if they get Isaiah Harden sign as well, it's game over. It's game over.
So let's actually use that as a jumping off point, because their free agency isn't over. This market and sign and trade should be a reminder that there are still some productive potentially productive players out there on the market. However, I mean, he was the last big domino to fall. It is getting Barron after this. Who are some of the guys out there, Mort, that you are keeping an eye on as we, you know, the calendar flips towards September and training camp starts in a few weeks?
Well, Hartenstein, as I brought up, it wasn't even a joke. I think he's objectively good. Mm-hmm. Now, I was kidding a little bit about him in Brooklyn because I don't think he would get just a ton of minutes. Or hell, maybe he would if there's truth to the matter that DeAndre Jordan wants out. So I guess we'll see. But Hartenstein to me is extremely intriguing. And I'm actually a little bit blown away that we're sitting here, you know, what is it, August 28th. And we haven't seen any movement on it. Like, we have not seen anything. August 28th. Oh, my God. Well, so side note, I need to remind myself to buy my wife something nice because it's our 17th anniversary.
Today?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh. All right. I am so bad at that. All right.
1 year. I'm going to start setting it in my calendar because I feel like this happens every year. And you're like, oh,
it does.
It was my anniversary like 5 days ago. Well,
not a wedding anniversary, dating.
Oh, okay. So, okay. Don't worry. Okay. That's good.
I think that's okay. And after 17 years, I think we've just stumbled into this, this mentality of just everyday life. All right.
Yeah.
No, but 28th here. How is our ICS Hartenstein still on the market is what I'm wondering. Let me just look up his numbers and his age because I'm sure I'm thinking he's 23, right?
Yes.
23. So he and this was from Cleveland last year where he actually got a chance to play 18 minutes per game. It was over 8 points per game, 6 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.2 blocks, 58% from the field, 33 from three. Like, he's just all around so decent. Like, he's not someone who's going to overwhelm you. He's not someone who's going to come in and start and play 35 minutes. Mm-hmm. But for a guy who will presumably come for maybe a little over the min, or hell, maybe even the minimum because, you know, the money has dried up, that's a good-ass guy to get in, even if it's on a one-year deal. Like, you shouldn't care. That's quality if he's a third stringer or even if he's a second stringer. So I have him very high on that list, Isaiah Hartenstein.
Yeah, he'd be the type of guy that OKC should be going after, or just any rebuilding team.
That's a good one, like the Moses Brown replacement player. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I like that. That's really good. Yes, very, very solid choice.
Yeah, I knew you were going to go with Hartenstein. I will say, I think the biggest names left. One of them is Paul Millsap.
Yeah.
The other is probably JJ Redick. Friend of the podcast, Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report, just wrote about both of those guys. It was earlier this week, although I don't know, time does not exist when you have an infant anymore.
Right.
Millsap, he says he has fans across the league, but conversations with teams this summer have revolved around salary figures at or near the $5.9 million taxpayer mid-level exception. So I think that's probably explains why he hasn't found a home yet, because, you know, he's at the age where typically you'd expect him to be settling for a min deal to go ring chase and join a championship contender. You know, I don't know if he's going to find a full, maybe he does, but at this point, I don't know which contenders even have the full taxpayer mid-level exception. I want to say it's like the Golden State still does, right?
Well, if they do, I don't remember who they, if they didn't, I should say, I don't remember who they spend it on. So I would assume so.
Right. But I mean, the tax consideration.
I was about to say that's what, 5.9 million. That's going to be like 20 million in or hell, even more.
Actually. Probably more. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think tax penalty. That's probably part of it. I think the Suns have part of theirs because I want to say they used about half of it on JaVale McGee. And he would actually make a lot of sense with the Suns, I would argue. Mm-hmm. But like the Lakers use theirs on none. The Clippers use most of theirs on Justice Winslow. The Sixers used a lot of theirs on Niang. The Bucks, I think, use most of theirs on George Hill, if I remember correctly. The Nets use theirs on Patty Mills. The Jazz use theirs on Rudy Gay. So it's going to be hard for him to find that offer from a legit contender.
Well, yeah. That said, we should consider TPEs.
That's fair.
Because you can actually use sign and trades and TPEs. You can absorb a player who is signed and traded into your TPE. I wonder though if the Nuggets, did they renounce him?
I don't remember hearing if they did, and I don't know why they would have.
Right. I mean, but if they did, that obviously takes that option out off the table, unless they would have to dip into some sort of his cap hold is still there. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Wouldn't see why not.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, why not? That's something that could happen. I mean, who has which contender out there has a decent TP of like, I don't know, 3 million, 4 million.
Sixers have 8 million that's expiring in about 2 weeks, but I've heard rumblings. They are eyeing Rajon Rondo with that.
Okay.
Yeah. I know.
Condolences for but yeah, that's not fantastic, but like that's I think we could look at a situation like that. We've seen how sign and trades have become back in vogue. I mean, Wolves even like have I think 4.something million from Daniel Tice.
It looks like Clippers have 8.25 from Rondo, so yeah, that's a good call. Lakers do not. Celtics use theirs on Schroeder, but they, Lord knows, they created another. Oh, they actually have two from Tristan Thompson and Evan Fournier and Kemba. Wow, yeah. So Celtics could do it, and he'd actually be a good fit there.
He would.
See, I don't know if they have a roster spot.
Now I'm just thinking a little bit ahead, right? Remember when I said that the Bulls could package Derek Jones Jr. in a first to upgrade somewhere else?
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's assume they did that, not necessarily for a backup four, and then they just signed Millsap into a sign and trade for the TPE. Then you could reroute Derek Jones Jr., Kobe White, or like a pick for someone, something really good elsewhere on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'd suddenly have something. Oh man, this is intriguing. I Millsap, I think, could be a not a huge domino, but like if he signs somewhere with a contender later in the season, so he also has fresh legs.
Yep.
And I know that's what JT Redick is planning. Like, he more or less came out and said, I'm not gonna be a training camp.
Yes. 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 He said that on his podcast. That's in Jake's story as well. He said, you know, I would say pretty much definitively, I won't be in a training camp to start the season. That's not going to happen. So I'll join a team at some point this season and finish the year and try to go get a chip. One front office executive who spoke with Jake also said that about Millsap. He said, I think he's going to be a minimum or a midseason guy. What's the rush? The money won't get better and he can just pick his team. What if New Orleans is really good come January? What happens when some guy gets hurt and that team starts scrambling for a replacement? So, yeah, it sounds like we might not get a resolution to either one of these guys anytime soon, but they will at least be someone to keep in the back of your mind with these trade exceptions, with, you know, whatever portion of your MLE, your favorite team's MLE is left over. Like, I know the Sixers still have, I think, 2.6 million of theirs left. It's something to keep an eye on for both of these guys. Anyone else stand out to you? There are a couple other names for me that, like...
Yeah, I saw your email, and I think you've missed the mark on a little bit because, like, you're going names heavy here. But
it's more like these guys at least deserve a roster spot, although I don't know how much they're...
But,
gonna contribute.
But where's Mikhailiuk? Where's Sweet?
Is he still he still hasn't signed?
Yeah, he's a UFA now, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
Like he's 24. He's shooting is very high upside. I'm not saying he's not gonna cost a whole lot. Like he's solid to bring off the bench as a shooter.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even think I don't think I scrolled far enough down on Spotrac.
Like, and one other player you kind of forgot to bring up, although I will say I'll forgive you for this one because he's technically still a restricted free agent, Jared Vanderbilt.
I knew you were going to say that. Again, another guy who once I saw Theo Pinson, I was out. That's where I stopped scrolling down. And Nando DiColo.
Right. Harry Giles is there too. I mean, it's.
Yeah. Norvell Pell, process legend.
Sure. What? No, I'm not going that far. No. Ersan Ilyasova is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's older, but I think he could still do something.
Yeah. Jeff the other guys. James Ennis is out there. Wesley Matthews is out there. Dennis Smith Jr., Denzel Valentine.
Troy Daniels. Troy Daniels. No, but he's a good combo who come in and really light it up.
Wait, Marcus Howard. No, he resigned. Did he?
That's a very good question. Let me see.
I know. I knew you were about to get very mad if he didn't. He signed a two-way.
Wow, a two-way for Marcus Howard? That seems like cheap.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, there are still some out there. DeMarcus Cousins is still out there. Can he play anymore?
Yeah. Well, Dante Exum, I have the same question.
Yeah.
Avery Bradley.
Avery Bradley, I would, like, for the min, I would consider.
Yeah. And same with Aaron Baines, if you just need some extra big man depth.
But what about Cousins for the regular season, though? Like, I understand that in the playoffs, he'll get exposed. But in the regular season, teams just don't have the time to, like, go into all these things. Like, he could be a regular season backup center who comes in and feasts for somebody.
Yeah, I'm surprised someone hasn't taken a flyer on him.
Yeah.
Despite all of the concern. Maybe bring him back to New Orleans. A Boogie Zion front court?
No. I think I have it. Boogie should go to Utah as a second as a backup center.
They have Hassan Whiteside now though.
Oh crap, did he signed there, didn't he? Yeah. all right, fair enough. But see,
third center.
Damn it. Yeah. No, that would be wrong. Damn it. See, no, but I would have loved that because Hassan is not an offensive-minded center. Boogie is. And, like, we know that Utah on occasion could struggle to get some offense going in the second unit. At the very least, that would have provided them with some flexibility. All right, take Utah off the board, even though I love that fit. Where would Boogie go? Where could DeMarcus Cousins go to just hoop in the regular season? Back up, like, getting 18 minutes per game, whatever. Where would he be fun?
He is not at all a Masai Ujiri player, but Toronto could use some extra front court depth.
They could, because they are not keeping around Aaron Baines, right?
He's still a free agent. They re-signed Ken Birch. They have Chris Boucher. Can maybe think about some short-term Pascal Siakam at the 5 minutes, but I don't think you want to rely on Precious Achiuwa or Scotty Barnes in small ball fives. So, they could use. They could, especially if one of those, Boucher or Birch got hurt.
Right.
You could just use like the third string break glass in case of emergency.
If he's on a min deal, how about a return to the Golden State Warriors for Boogie?
Ooh. Yeah, that's interesting. Or the Lakers.
The Lakers, hell yeah. He's over 30, so he'd qualify.
Right, exactly. I mean, they have Gasol and Dwight already.
Yeah.
And like AD at some point will hopefully start playing center a little more. But yeah, I mean.
No. Sorry, I have it. I have it because they have a glaring hole at center.
Okay, who?
The Charlotte Hornets.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Nets.
No, like that's too many shot takers and all that. No, but the Hornets, I mean, right now they're projected to start Mason Plumlee.
Yeah.
That's fine. But after that, it's Vernon Carey Jr., who barely played. I mean, getting
Kai DeMarcus, Jones is there.
Kai Jones was a rookie. Yeah, but like you can throw DeMarcus in there as, you know, a 15-minute player. Just go get us buckets in the half court or take some threes, whatever. Just get points and get rebounds for the short amount of minutes you're in there. Produce. And then we can sort of maybe stay level, and then we bring LaMelo and the rest of the gang in to play and wrap out games.
It looks like I don't know if they have a roster spot.
That would be an issue, right? Yeah. Let's see.
Can you sign Boogie to a two-way?
So this is the most depressing thing. They already have two-ways.
Oh, no.
Oh, damn it. All right. Well, I mean, then move some stuff around. Do you really need, like, Wesley Yuando? I mean, Cody Martin? Wait, no.
What about Miami?
Oh, Brian, that is interesting. Yeah. Okay, I don't know if he's heat culture, but I mean...
No, very much not heat culture.
No, but you're right. Like, off the bench, it's Dwayne Dedmon at the backup center?
Or, I mean, you're at seven, who I can only hope is on a two-way, but no, it looks like they have him on a fully guaranteed deal. Or Haslam will maybe get his token 3 minutes per season.
Oh, God.
But yeah,
that is such a wasted roster spot. I don't know. Like, all right, I'm like, can I just take a minute here? Why the hell? I understand they want to keep him on and all that, and that's admirable. I love that. But why on an active playing roster? Just give him the freaking assistant coach label already. Why waste the roster spot?
That's actually a good seg into the Jared Dudley situation, if you want to hit on that quickly.
Oh, we can. Yeah. Let's go for it.
Because he is joining the Dallas Mavericks as an assistant coach, and LeBron James was very upset when he saw that news. Tweeted some NSFW language, and then quickly apologized for it, because of course he did. But yeah,
he he talked down to the entire NBA community by saying, for many reasons that you wouldn't understand.
Yeah. Yep. Sounds about right. Yeah.
Thank you, LeBron, for telling me I'm a complete moron. Appreciate it, but thank you.
But I mean, I think these are similar situations in that Dudley and Haslam would have played the same role. Had the Lakers kept Dudley, he would also be the 15th man who doesn't really play much, if at all, but he is the locker room culture guy.
Yeah.
And I mean that not just to like heat culture way, but, you know, setting the tone and like being able to go up to LeBron or AD and criticize them in a way that a coach can't, or, you know, for Haslam, can go up to Jimmy Butler, can go up to Bam Adebayo and challenge these guys in a way that Eric Spoelstra might not feel empowered to do so. Now the Lakers don't have that. And I think that is what LeBron was bemoaning. So that, going back to Haslam for a second, I think that's why they're using that roster spot on him, even though, yes, in terms of just pure, like, could we have 15 guys in there who would actually contribute to us playing winning basketball? Haslam's not going to accomplish that goal
with
his on-court production. But if he is
Brian, sorry to interrupt, but I actually realized why the Lakers also didn't want to retain Jared Dudley. He's 36, and they just don't have time for prospects at this point.
Well, apparently they told him they were trying to get younger, but they still have a couple open roster spots, right?
I mean, if they wanted to get younger, Jared Dudley was right there.
I know. Yeah. Well, no, they got to go for like 33-year-olds. That's their sweet spot.
Oh, yeah, that's true. No, but yeah. I hear you. And I think that could be super interesting. So, especially for Dallas, if Luka listens. I mean, Luka is a little bit different, of course. I mean, you can't always say that what works in one town is going to work for someone else's town. Like, you just can't be sure. The question that I'm sitting here with, Brian, is what's the over-under until Jared Dudley takes over for Jason Kidd?
Well, I mean, Kidd was previously a Lakers assistant, so he is obviously familiar with Dudley. And to throw it back to last episode, you know, we spoke with Miran Fader, the author, the New York Times best-selling author.
There you go. Thank you. Yeah.
of the new book on Giannis. And Jared Dudley features in there prominently, especially in Giannis's early years, where he really took Giannis under his wings. And Giannis was just trying to soak up every single detail about like how to be a professional from Jared Dudley. So having that around Luka in particular could be interesting. Yeah. Not saying that Luka isn't a professional. Like, of course, you know, he's one of the best players in the NBA already. But, like, just having, having that support system in place to possibly, you know, bridge the gap between Jason Kidd, who, as Miran covered, has some very controversial coaching tactics at times, and then, you know, Luka. Like, maybe so to prevent Luka from trying to choke out his coach, Jared Dudley is there to intervene to be like, hey, man, this was what we were trying to accomplish with this drill. We weren't trying to make you run suicide for 3 hours on Christmas Day.
And by the way, worth noting is that Giannis and Dudley only spent 1 year together. So if you made that lasting impression 1 year, that's impressive. I mean, that means that you're a good character guy. But again, I just give Haslam that same title if you're Miami. There's no reason to waste a roster spot. Go with someone young with that roster spot instead and hope that that could turn into something. There's no upside in Haslam as a player at this point at all.
Yeah. I guess we'll have to see if Dudley makes the same impact in Dallas that he did with the Lakers, because I think it was Kuzma. Someone asked Kuzma, who was your best teammate you've ever had? And he said, Jared Dudley by far.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if there is, if, I don't remember who, it was either Steve Jones or Mo Dockel on Twitter one day. We're talking about the Haslam situation in general. And was saying there is a difference when you're in the locker room with these guys as a fellow player. There is a difference in how you can relate to them versus if you're on the coaching staff or in the front office. So, you know, even though you were just a player last year, I don't know. I'm not in there every day. I can't say one way or another, but maybe there is going to be a difference in how Luka relates to Jared Dudley versus how Jared Dudley related to LeBron AD this past year. And maybe that does justify Miami keeping Haslam on the roster, especially with the guy like Jimmy, who has been known to ruffle some feathers at times. And now
a two-way coaching option.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Maybe that's the solution. The NBA needs to open up two-way spots for young guys, two-way spots for young guys. And then one two-way spot for an old guy.
Once again, we solved the NBA, Brian. We did it.
Yeah. A player coach two-way spot.
There you go. That's perfect. I love that. That has, we can even call it the Udonis Haslam. I'm okay with that.
Right. Or yeah, the Udonis Haslam Jared Dudley Memorial two-way spot. Well, the Sixers did that with Elton Brand a couple years ago too, when they brought him in. They did,
yes.
And then, you know, they brought him in to professionalize the locker room a little bit, because it was in the midst, I believe that was in the midst of the 2015-2016 just absolute disaster. Yeah. Dumpster fire of a season. Yeah, it was, because that was when Okafor came in and they thought he was the Duke connection there. So yeah, I think there is hidden value that none of us will see, because we just see these guys sitting on the bench the whole year and we're like, what the hell? You're taking up a roster spot. You're paying this guy like $3 million when it doesn't matter. Like, you know, it's,
I'll buy that. But at the same time, if there's a guy out on the market that could do a lot for you who is younger, I just wonder, is it enough? Like, is the trade-off big enough?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I guess the question is, like, if you could get Paul Millsap on a minimum deal, then yes, you would prefer to get Paul Millsap, because he could, like, he's also a veteran with a ton of experience. He would hopefully have that same sort of impact on the locker room. But if it is one of these, like, fringe, we don't know if this guy is even going to play for us.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, though. I mean, I know it's been a topic of much discussion among Miami fans really for the last couple years.
Yeah, Nikias Duncan has been his his usual vague self on Twitter about it. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, LeBron's reaction to Dudley leaving does make me think there is hidden value here. And especially, you know, it seems like it would have been really valuable for the Lakers this year, adding another high usage player like Russell Westbrook, overhauling basically the rest of the team. I mean, you have to like start the team culture from ground up again. Mm-hmm. It's LeBron and AD and like basically everyone else, Taylor Horton Tucker is there, but like everyone else is new almost. So, you know, having a Dudley in there to do that sort of team culture building work that perhaps LeBron and AD don't have time for, that's just like not right in their job purview. Like their responsibility is just lead us on the court. And it's like, Dudley's got to be the guy leading the group text and like inviting guys out to dinner. And, you know, especially the young guys, like inviting Malik Monk and Kendrick Nunn out to go to the movies or go bowling one day or something like that.
And he won't care if all of them don't have iPhones.
I don't know if that's true. Yeah. Those green bubbles piss you off.
Oh, man. Again, go read Mirren's book. That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
Go read Mirren's book. Yeah. And by the way, Brian, while I have you, so there have been a couple of Danes reaching out, asking about where to buy Mirren's book in Denmark. Oh. And it has proven a little bit difficult. So you can go to bookdepository.com. It is available there, but I do believe that there is a waiting period of about 80 days until it gets published or not published, but it gets released to Denmark. So it'll take a little bit of time. There doesn't seem to be an ebook option as of right now, but I have brought it up to Mirren, so maybe we'll see. But so yeah, you may have to be a little bit more patient.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I know even on Amazon, it is sold out for now, in stock soon. There is, it looks like a Kindle edition. So if you have, it looks like it, at least I'm on Amazon right now.
Interesting.
Yes, cannot emphasize enough, in case our last episode did not convince you, I cannot emphasize enough how enjoyable of a read this thing was.
Yeah.
It's just
book of the year, basketball book of the year, hands down. I mean, I would be so shocked if something came out from now until the end of the year that beat this. It's brilliant, 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 brilliant. And we need to get her back again as soon as she writes another book, which hopefully she does next month, because I'm ready for it.
We give me all the books before written. Then, hopefully before then. But yes, as soon as she writes her Joel Embiid follow up, we will definitely have her back.
I love how we just kind of come on, Mirren, write about Joel Embiid and look at Doncic. Come on,
you have magic powers. All right, well, that's a good place for us to wrap up. So, thank you all as always for listening in today. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews, and we're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Morten, September is almost here. We're going to start season preview content soon, which is just, I swear to God, one of these years we're going to get an off season.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it. Feels like we've had three seasons just run amok all over each other. And like the basketball fan in me loves it, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I keep thinking all the time that these players, they need a break.
Yeah.
I think they deserve it. Like it feels like we're just next month. Like I already got my email from the NBA saying next month, that's when you'll be charged again for NBA League Pass. Like, okay, it moves really quickly. Okay.
It does. But yeah, we will start ramping up our season preview content, division previews, awards pod, Mort's favorite, just all sort. Our league pass rankings will be coming back. So stay tuned. We got a lot of good stuff coming up these next few weeks.
Absolutely.
All right. Catch you later, man.
Later.